Hi, this is Paul, and I guess this is a dispatch from puppy prison. It's a little ironic because the puppy's sitting down here in a kennel, so the puppy's actually the one sort of behind little wire bars, and I am not. I've been fascinated by the response to the conversations about, especially Doug Wilson. Even though the Sky Gitani video got more views, the response to Wilson, especially sort of a defensive posture towards Wilson on many. Obviously, there's a lot of fans of Wilson in this culture war space, and so yeah, it's been very interesting, the response. And I got an email from a friend asking more about it, and a lot of people sort of wondering if, well, sort of on both sides, a lot of people wondering on one side, to their horror, if Paul Vanderclay might be joining Doug Wilson's colony, or if Paul Vanderclay might be joining Bethel Church in Reading, or if, if I might be doing any of these things. Generally speaking, I'm super interested in the dynamic, and just like with Jordan Peterson, it's not only, and probably not even predominantly, the person that I'm looking at, but it's the response to the person I'm looking at. So I actually wrote an email to my friend sort of explaining some of this. And as it often happens, the videos are kind of thinking out loud, very much unfinished thoughts. And then when I write, things sort of get distilled. So I wanted to read some of what I wrote to my friend. And playing, for those of you in the membership channel, I've been playing around with the Kindle Scribe and playing with that, playing with e-ink. I like e-ink better, especially now that I'm in puppy prison, because I have to be outside, I have to be inside. LCD screens or LED screens or OLED screens don't work quite as well outside. They're harder on the eyes. So if you're curious about my thoughts on gadgets, you can find that in the membership section. I don't want this to become a gadget blog, but I do like talking about gadgets, and I'll probably do some more talking about, I just bought an electric vehicle, and I'll probably do, again, all of that stuff goes into the membership section because, yeah, otherwise the channel, the focus of the channel, if there is a focus of the channel, the focus of a channel just gets too crazy. So I thought I'd read my response to my friend with respect to the Wilson Johnson videos, the Wilson Bethel videos. Both Wilson and Johnson were turnaround. Whoops, that's the second part. My curiosity about Wilson has already peaked. To this morning, I've been listening to an unbelievable. I really Unbelievable isn't the same without Justin Brierley. They're clearly fishing around for a new Justin Brierley, and they're not going to be able to replace him because people are individuals, and Justin is Justin, and a lot of his sort of sunny fairness, that's just part of his personality. So we'll see what happens to the Unbelievable show. My curiosity about Wilson has already piqued. My interest is in the approach, the response, and impact, which make Bethel an interesting comparison. Both are sort of post-millennial, both are sort of Kuiperian drives to remake culture. I haven't talked a lot on the channel about Abraham Kuyper, but anybody following from the Christian Reform context will know something about Abraham Kuyper. Abraham Kuyper was this 19th century, early 20th century polymath in the Netherlands that had a huge social impact on the Netherlands, a huge impact on the Christian Reformed Church. One of the most interesting things about Kuyper is that in the Christian Reformed Church, both the progressives, the CRC progressive transformationalists, and sort of the confessional conservatives both point to Kuyper for inspiration, which is super interesting because in the CRC they're warring, but both sort of point to him as their inspiration because Kuyper had within him both this strong idea of the antithesis and this idea about transformationalist. And some people pointed to a video of Doug Wilson, which I saw part of. I'd actually watched some of it before Phlebas and others pointed it to me on Twitter. And Eschatology Matters, I think the channel is. See, when I'm set up like this, I can't do all the fun things I can do in my office. I've just got to sit here with a selfie stick in my phone. But the one of the things that helped sort of turn Doug Wilson onto Calvinism, he started as an Arminian and went over to Calvinism, and especially the sort of theonomist strain in Calvinism, which is a super interesting little subgroup of Reformed Christianity in America. But the it was Kuyper that Doug Wilson, but it was sort of the conservative Kuyper, not sort of the progressive transformationalist Kuyper. And a lot, and both of these ideas were in Kuyper right from the start, because if you look at Abraham Kuyper's story, he starts out sort of as a 19th century liberal, and then, like many clergy, he takes his first congregation in a starter church. This is very common in churches. You finish seminary, you might be the best student at seminary, but you're still going to go to a starter church where you really learn preaching, you really learn pastoral care, you really learn people. Abraham Kuyper goes to this starter church, and there he meets a woman with a deep sense of piety and living faith that sort of causes him to deconstruct from his 19th century Reformed liberal posture and to really become, get in touch with a living faith and piety. I talked some about this in the Stark video that I did with the churching of America, that a lot of the I want to talk more about that book. I'm finding that book super interesting. A lot of the telling, or us observing ourselves with respect to how religion is going, Stark points out in his book that it's extremely biased, because most of this kind of stuff is written by the academics, and the academics have a certain bias in them. And so when someone like Rodney Stark looks at the church not through a theological lens, but through much more of an economist's lens, where you're looking at numbers and money and some of these impacts, the view looks very different. And so Kuyper, as this is not an unusual story, I mean, we sort of have talked about this word deconstruction, meaning conservative Christians or church-going Christians. There's a transformation and they lose their faith and they leave church. But many in the liberal spaces, let's say they leave church and they're in a cultural space, they keep deconstructing and they wind up in church. In other words, things tend to flow both ways. So Kuyper had a big impact on Wilson. And if you watch other videos, you can hear that. Both are sort of post-millennial. Both are sort of a Kuyperian drive to remake culture. I mentioned briefly in the video that Johnson, there's like the Seven Mountain story, which is sort of this movement in Pentecostal circles that is analogous to, say, Kuyperian transformationalism in the Christian Reformed Church, where they realize that there are all these aspects of culture that church as institution alone doesn't really impact. And so the idea in many of these evangelical places and charismatic spaces, where it's very much analogous to sort of the Kuyperian transformationalist, we need to impact all of these areas. Abraham Kuyper, of course, had his sphere sovereignty ideas, where it said, church as institution should govern church, there's state as institution, the academy, had all of these different spheres, which then in the beginning of the 20th century led to the pillarization of the Netherlands, and that is sort of broken down. So, Johnson versus Wilson is sort of memes versus music, in many ways. Wilson goes with classical education, which is interesting. Bethel goes with contemporary music, contemporary church ecclesiology. Johnson very much goes seeker ethos. Wilson goes classical. So again, they're really interesting compare and contrast. Yeah, in many ways they're very similar, in other ways super different. Wilson generates attention and audience by pointing out salient transgressions to people tired of the pace of rapid change and anxious about cultural corruption. So if you listen to Wilson's blogs and watch his little videos, they're all triggering in terms of fear about cultural corruption. And he keeps hitting those points. So take a point out of the California legislature, point to the drag queen story hour. And so in that sense, he's very much sort of in the Doug Wilson Daily Wire. I mean, they're all sort of in the same category, doing the same things. You sort of trigger people with these outrage fear mechanisms, and in that way you can mobilize them to action. His posture also is predominantly political. He sort of The irony for me as a minister, especially as with my own brand of Kuyperianism, is if you really believe politics is downstream from religion, if you really want to sort of look at the deeper impact, stick with your priorities more with the religion rather than the politics. Religion is always, politics is now. These kinds of issues. So Wilson generates attention and audience by pointing out salient transgressions to people tired of the pace of rapid change and anxious about cultural corruption. Johnson generates interest by the miraculous and music cycle technologies. And so there's very much a difference of approach. And whereas both Wilson and Johnson are very interested in culture, and both Wilson and Johnson are very interested in religion, you'll notice which one is sort of forefronting which. Johnson forefronts religion, Wilson forefronts politics and culture. And I think this is basically a difference of approach. And it's also given their gifts. You listen to Johnson speak, and he's kind of a run-of-the-mill preacher. He's laser focused on this, basically a realized eschatology, bringing the kingdom down now. Wilson is sort of this meme lord, and he's very clever. Some people pointed out that his videos aren't that impressive because he's reading a script, and yeah, fair enough. But he's a really sharp writer, and he's super clever when it comes to triggering people. And I'm not saying that is a bad thing. That's a skill that any evangelist or preacher. I just listened to Glenn Scrivener's take on the Russell Brand thing. And Glenn Scrivener also is just, he's like Doug Wilson in that he's just super quick. He has an angular eye on it, and he goes for the jugular. And that's a real skill. And it's a super important skill in terms of an evangelist. Oh no, Kindle, don't go to sleep. We got to kind of do these in one take because I don't want to edit. All of this is back. Oops, and the Kindle tends to turn my page easily. All of this is background of how America became the religious nation that it is, especially as in contrast with the rest of the sons of England. And it's super interesting because you sort of have to compare the United States with Canada and Australia. So England, Canada, Australia all stayed colonies under the realm. They were all super Christian nationalism. I mean, having a Christian king who promises to defend the church, et cetera, that's Christian nationalism. I mean, that's the real deal. Again, this use of this term right now is, I find, just appalling. But it's interesting that the United States, with its pluralism and its diversity, grew way more, I mean, and grew. Again, look at those 1776, 17% were religious participants, let's say, adherents. The more diverse America became, the more religious it became. Now, that doesn't mean that England and Canada and Australia are not diverse, but part of my real critique about Wilson is he basically wants to say that America really has to sort of, and I think kind of go back to a certain posture where God is more forefronted in the culture. I don't really know how that's done. The way it was pursued during the Cold War was different from the way it was assumed in the First World War was different from the way it was prosecuted in the Civil War. And that's in contrast, again, you had these two great awakenings that really intensified religion in America. And again, in many ways, those great awakenings looked much more like Bill Johnson than Doug Wilson, which again, I find these two guys just a super compare and contrast with respect to these issues. And there are many, many others like Doug Wilson and Bill Johnson out there in the country, but what makes them an interesting case study is geographically and culturally, they're both in the far west if you look at this American nations paradigm that I talked about in the video I released this morning. So this is super interesting. The CRC, of course, is less pure than either approach because they're basically a dissolved ethnic enclave. That's what the Christian Reformed Church is. The Dunamis CRC faction is super tiny. And so my friend, who he was a former missionary with me in the Dominican Republic, who went to Bill Johnson's church and went to one of their big events and sort of came back super impressed. And I mean, he had always used some of these charismatic things in his church and his approach. And even before he went into seminary, he was also part of sort of the leftover of the Jesus movement. He had did done some communal living in Grand Rapids. There was sort of a Christian commune in Grand Rapids during the 70s that was sort of breaking up. And many of those elements actually became the church I attended in Grand Rapids, which is Madison Square. And so he went to Bill Johnson and he was super impressed. And he and I had some correspondence back and forth about it, my questions and concerns about basically about Johnson's implicit eschatology, which I think connects very deeply into this question of Jesus and how can I say it? Jesus and missiological approach. And that's where eschatology and approach really sort of the rubber meets the road. The Doug Wilson adjacent CRC folks are more numerous, but won't go down that road with his theonomy. I'm struck by how he really downplays Rushdoony and some other aspects of Doug Wilson's theonomy with his blogs and his videos. In that sense, he's rather secularist. He's not out there necessarily pushing, reformed reconstructionism as much as, let's say, he could be. He's playing a culture war game not dissimilar to a lot of other conservatives. Doug Wilson, Daily Wire, doing similar things. I don't want to give you guys make you guys seasick by moving this camera too much. And it's soup, but the theonomy gets very interesting as the deeper you go into it. Both Wilson and Johnson are turnaround church planters. They both inherited congregations that were floundering, and by force of their vision, basically creating new church sorts like church plants. Wilson talks about this in one of his interviews where he was the worship pastor at this church, which to me is, I've got to watch the light here, which to me is super interesting because I think Wilson should make some music videos. I don't know if that church there, they were doing like contemporary worship. I would, truth be told, I would love to visit both places. It's just shaking loose Sundays to do this kind of thing are tough. But I'd love to visit both places and take a much more interested and detailed look at the churches because, of course, as a pastor, I'm super interested in the details of the churches. What is their worship style like? What is their demographic? Who are their people? Who is coming there? What are their stories? Because of my ADHD, I'll probably long move on from there, but at some point, I'll probably get to both of these places and check them out. Very interested in them. So Doug Wilson is the worship pastor, and the church planter leaves, and so Doug Wilson basically inherits the church plant. Bill Johnson was called to this established church and basically told them, "This is the laser vision of my interest," after he had visited the Toronto Blessing. And then, as is often case in something like this, a number of people leave the church because they don't like sort of this laser vision. But with that laser vision, the church grows. Laser vision and church growth is a very interesting dynamic because, on one hand, it can really grow a large, intense church which can really do a lot. But on the other hand, it tends to lose because of just the distribution of temperaments, distribution, and the way temperaments sort of impact theology and approach and just sort of aspects of a full Christian life. Laser focus basically attracts, but it also loses. And it's just sort of the dynamics of this kind of thing. So you can read Free Brilliant's comment that I pinned on the video, because he and his wife both, we'll see to the degree if he wants to go and come on the channel and do a Rando's conversation and talk more about Bethel. And I can totally understand why he doesn't want to, because these are his family. I mean, both he and his wife, their parents moved to Bethel to be part of the church. Again, this is the laser focus, and because they were true believers, they were deeply committed in that effort. And so, but the second generation, if you remember the video I made about what about the kids of Orthodoxy, what will happen to them? Same kind of questions, because what these steep slope religions tend to attract are people who, for one reason or another, really want the intensity. But again, by virtue of distribution of temperaments and sort of the menu that's under a religious economy, other people will be disaffected by those emphases. And again, the compare and contrast here between, say, Doug Wilson and Bill Johnson is emphasis. If you read Ferillian's comment, which I pinned in the Bethel video, you can read an exile from Bethel. Both he and his wife were kids brought there by their parents who relocated to Reading to be part of Bethel. Both had a lot of experience with it, and both walked away with mixed feelings about the whole enterprise. That's pretty common. And you know, you can even listen to that in Richard Rowland's assessment of his church planting and his upbringing. And Jonathan Peugeot's, there are things that he says, you know, that were really good, realizing the limits of the selfie stick video. There are things they really appreciated by their upbringing, but there were reasons why they turned away and took their own path, as in many cases their parents often did. My main concern with the relative impact are the relative impact of the two approaches. Fear, culture, politics, that's really Wilson. Fear, culture, politics. Or Miracles and Music by Bethel. There's the contrast. Both have degrees of success and legitimacy, but both work on people in different ways. It's a question of forefront and back end. Bethel has fear, culture, politics, but keeps it sort of behind the scenes. That's sort of, you know, you have to go a little deeper into the video archive to find Bill Wilson talking about it. Wilson has music and social healing through conservatism. They both work both angles, but which one do they sort of put on the marquee, and which one is sort of the main attractor? Because again, in many cases, what you catch them with, you catch them too. Wilson has the music and social healing through conservatism, refugees from liberationism, but he leads with the fear culture politics. It's a super interesting experiment in approach and in attention. Both are examples of the larger approaches in the country. Assemblies of God and Pentecostals are more moderate examples of Johnson's approach, and his church, in fact, left the Assemblies of God. Many others among conservative religious and secular groups have Wilson's approach. Isolating the two examples gives an opportunity to compare and contrast. As I said, the deeper I go into Wilson, the less interesting he becomes. He's closer to CRC models, but is sort of another version of Reformed conservatism with some different twists like the theonomy and the eschatology. Johnson, too, is really just another Pentecostal, but he's more laser focused on the miraculous realized eschatology. So, in other words, you can find less intense versions and less skillful versions of Wilson and Johnson just out there. And so they're good representatives, and they're kind of available from puppy prison here in Sacramento to sort of play with mentally, because they're noteworthy examples. They're extreme examples, but you'll find less intense examples of Doug Wilson's approach all over the place, and less intense examples of Bill Johnson's approach all over the place. And in that way, they're sort of leaders in their respective communities. Stark's observation about sex is super interesting. SECTS. It's hard to sort of differentiate sex, SEX, and SECTS. And when SECTS turns to SEX, well, then it's just kind of all over the place. Stark's observation about sex is super interesting in this regard because sex, SECTS, are often intensifications of specific aspects in a religious matrix that are latent but backgrounded. In other words, as the observation I made in today's video, that America, because there isn't a state religion, and because there's so much religious freedom, you see sort of this natural continuous evolution within religious communities of both heresy creation and revitalization. And those two dynamics tend to go together. I've said in previous videos that orthodoxy and heterodoxy sort of co-evolve. You don't know heterodoxy, or you don't know your orthodoxy until a heterodoxy sort of evolves, and it forces the church to sort of create the antibodies. And in many ways, orthodoxy is the record of antibodies in a church. And that's part of the way that religious organisms become so strong, analogous to how humans do, because the antibodies basically form an orthodox confessional system that gives it a degree of immunity against various heterodoxies, which are going to run the church into the ground. And this is sort of, again, my extrapolation from Alistair McGrath's book entitled Heresies. I've talked about this one quite a bit. And I think that's sort of a helpful way of thinking about the role of confessionalism. But again, what's interesting is that certain autoimmune, in some ways, confessionalism run amok is like an autoimmune disorder because it's sort of like an allergy. You're just overreacting all the time. Whereas sort of a healthy orthodoxy is a the organism's healthy resistance to infections and heresies that are going to lead you astray. But all of these leaders are often edge cases, and one way or another, they're going to flirt with different heresies. I made a video on the Jansen trial in the Christian Reformed Church, where Herman Hoeksema was the one sort of prosecuting Jansen and pushing Jansen out of the seminary for liberalism. But then Hoeksema, the next year at Synod, would he himself be kicked out of the CRC because of his intensification for one aspect of Kuyper and his denial of common grace. So in other words, what happened with Herman Hoeksema is he so identified with one side of Kuyper, the antithesis, that he completely turned his back on sort of the balancing end of Kuyper, which is common grace, and the Christian Reformed Church then kicked him out. Johnson's eschatology always helps, always threats to warp his Christology, which puts him on the radar for the confessionalist guard dogs. And that's part of the reason why you'll find videos on YouTube warning about Johnson. And again, this is part of what happens with innovation and extremes, why they often sort of lead to heresy. But in a sense, and this I think is Stark's point and kind of the point I was trying to make in the video I released this morning, which is kind of a, my thinking was a little fuzzy again after a night's sleep, and then my friend writing me forces me to sort of sharpen it up. In an active pluralistic environment, religions become stronger in a similar way to, I've told the story before about my wife teaching in these two different schools. She used to teach in a very impoverished school into the district where many of the children come from homes of neglect, immigrant homes, very poor community. There were like no allergies in her classroom. And now she's been teaching in this school of choice, which is much more specialized. And there's just a lot of progressives, wealthy. All of these people are so they're so down for racial reconciliation, but there's so many of them, they've basically little children of color can hardly get into schools because all of the wealthy, educated, driven moms who want their kids in this special school, there's just not that many slots left out for the poor kids and the poor parents and the immigrants and the homes of neglect. Well, their parents aren't, they just go to the school that's in the neighborhood. So, but what's interesting is that in this school, with all of the, highly intense moms who are worried about every aspect of their children, all of those kids have allergies because, those kids didn't play in the dirt and eat dirt and, have peanut butter and do all of these things, which would sort of build up the immune system. And so you find, a healthy immune system, a healthy doctrinal system, and not, let's say, an immune disorder doctrinal system sort of comes from a hothouse, from a monopoly. So, and again, listening to the Alistair McGrath Cosmic Skeptic video that's on Unbelievable, I think towards the end of the video, that's basically what they talked about, how in many ways new atheism, despite all the consternation that it drove, it actually, Bishop Barron has made this point many times, it actually sharpened the church. I just thought of the fact that I should probably have to, I'm going to have to put this video into an audible form too for the audio podcast, because I thought first it was going to be a 5-10 minute video, but here it's 30 minutes. I mean, the puppy is sleeping. I can show you the puppy. See, there's puppy prison. Puppy prison is sort of a wordplay. So, but these, what I wind up doing when I'm taking care of the puppy is I have all these thoughts and I can listen to things and I have thinking and then I take notes and I try to have those notes and then I go into my office and have content for like 4 or 5 videos, but I only have time to do one or two, and then it's a mess. Anyway, so it's all super interesting to me, and I'm ADHD, so I know people come to the channel because I talked about Jordan Peterson or Jonathan Peugeot or angels or spirits or how many things, and now I'm talking about Doug Wilson and Sky Gittani and Bill Johnson, and then 2 weeks from now, people are going to be like, "What happened to Doug Wilson and Sky Gittani and Bill Johnson?" They'll probably come around again, but I'm also reading American history and American church history and thinking about de-churched and churching and cultural Christianity versus sort of church Christianity and nominalism and all of these things. So I'm super ADHD, which means I'll be moving on to other shiny things that catch my interest. It's also super interesting to me who people really identify with and why on the world of screens they invest in them. So the knights and the mooks dynamic is super interesting. YouTube is really a fascinating thing, and I do find it fascinating. So, yep. So a little bonus video. I gotta make videos how I can. We have a vet appointment today, and hope I think the puppy gets her last parvo shot today, which will give me a little bit of liberty, because really what I got to do is I got to be taking this puppy out with me. I've taken the puppy to church a couple of times, not to church, not to Sunday morning because I'm too busy for that, but to women's Bible study. And I had a pastor's meeting yesterday that I took the puppy to because the puppy's got to get used to going out in public, being around people, not getting too excited, learning how to behave with people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's all the whole project of the puppy raising program. He's a black lab in a black kennel. He always kind of sleeps. She always kind of sleeps with one eye open. So, yep, that's what's happening. So, you might get more videos like this. Who knows? But leave a comment.